Hello, welcome to Microbyte. My name's Gavin Clark, and I'm software editor with The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of ZDNet's All About Microsoft blog.
And on today's show, what difference a download makes. Windows Phone 7, the first update for Microsoft's phone operating system, has choked. And Microsoft is blaming the carriers are blaming Microsoft, and the OEMs are also getting it in the neck too. What's gone wrong? Who's to blame? And can Microsoft save what's turning into a deteriorating situation? Internet Explorer 9 has finally arrived, but do people care? The download numbers say no. But is this case a case of being a slow burn up from Microsoft? And pulling it all together, Microsoft's annual Mixed conference is coming up in April in Las Vegas. Microsoft will be talking HTML5 and Windows Phone, mostly it seems, judging by the speaker lineup. We'll be taking a look at what Microsoft, who's speaking and what you can expect from Microsoft. So MJ, it started with such promise, didn't it? Last November, the reviews are in. Microsoft couldn't say enough of how good the reviews were, and even the reviewers couldn't stop saying how good the phone was, could they?
Yeah, I was one of those reviewers. And I really still am trying to hold out hope against hope for Windows Phone 7, Gavin. But yeah. I'm starting to lose the faith, I have to say.
Why is that? What has gone wrong? Why has Microsoft managed to ram defeat back down the jaws of victory? Or is it victory down the jaws of defeat?
Yeah, good question. Instead of saying what's gone wrong, let's say what's gone right. Not a whole lot. Yeah. Microsoft's had a lot of problems getting any updates out for the phones. Yeah. And originally we were thinking January or possibly February we'd see a first update for the phone. Then Microsoft told us to expect a minor update, like an update to the updater mechanism for the phone. That was supposed to be the new February update. We had some problems out there with people's phones being bricked by this update, specifically handsets from Samsung. And then because of that brickage or bricking or whatever you want to call it, Microsoft ended up postponing the first major update, the one that's called Nodo, the copy and paste update, to the end of March. So here we are at the end of March, and very few people still have any updates on their phones. They don't have February and they don't have March. Like you said, the carriers are blaming Microsoft and saying Microsoft's doing something to hold up the process. Microsoft's pretty much blaming the carriers at this point, saying that they're doing some testing that's taking some unspecified amount of time, and we don't really know what's being tested, who's testing, why it's taking them months to test, because supposedly the coding on Nodo was done in December of 2010. So we just have this kind of perpetual, like, everybody's blaming everyone else and nobody really knows what's happening.
I also saw is it Joe Belfiore was also blaming the OEMs. He said they'd encountered some unexpected problems on the hardware. Or his words were, we found situations that Microsoft hadn't anticipated, which I thought was interesting considering Microsoft had specifically limited Windows Phone 7 to just 5 OEM providers, specifically to avoid any nasty surprises.
You're talking about the preview he did for Mix, where he was doing a video preview on Channel 9. And he said, we were kind of surprised how the OEMs had configured their phones. And I was kind of like, how could you be surprised?
Yes. You're the last people I wanted to be surprised.
Like you said, there weren't that many OEMs anyways. And, you know, part of Windows Phone 7's appeal was Microsoft had really locked down the chassis and made it so that everybody was kind of on the same page. All the, you know, handful of OEMs were all supposedly doing the same thing and adhering to the same specs. And then suddenly, surprise, we didn't know what the OEMs were doing with their phones. And it's like, wait a minute. What's the disconnect here? How did this happen, right?
Well, it's a credibility issue too, because what am I supposed to think? Which party line am I supposed to buy from Microsoft? The one that they've locked down the hardware, or two, that maybe they hadn't locked the hardware down. So it's not clear which is what they're saying, whether it's saying it's accurate here or whether they're giving us the truth, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, to Microsoft's credit, they last week published a chart, an interactive chart where you can go on and say, where's my Windows Phone 7 update? Like, where is it in the process? But the chart is still pretty vague. It has these segments like testing and scheduling, and we don't really know like how far into the testing or scheduling process any given handset on any given carrier is. You know, it's like we know there's a window. We don't know how big the window is, and there's no dates on those charts.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, I would say Microsoft is trying to protect its relationship with the carriers. So it's taking on some blame itself. And the carriers have said to some reporters, no, actually, it's Microsoft who's throttling things and holding it back.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know which end they're throttling it on, supposedly. Was it getting them the code, or was it after the carriers tested and then had to give the code back to Microsoft? Because supposedly, Microsoft's the one who's actually deploying the update.
Right.
So it's just like, man, after trying to figure this out, I'm just like, woo, I don't know where we are in the process. All I know is there's still no phone on Verizon for Windows 7, mm-hmm. Windows Phone 7. And people who already have their phones don't even know where the updates are.
It's not clear to me if Microsoft's supposedly taking the lead on the updates, what the problem is. Is it because Nodo was supposed to pave the way for Mango later in the year? If they can't get, theoretically, if Microsoft is correct, if we're still to believe what they're saying, if you can't get Nodo, then you can't get Mango. This is a critical, if Microsoft against to be believed, this is a critical update. They have to get it right before you can get the second version of the OS later this year, which we presume they're going to be talking about at MIX later in April. So it's an interesting thing. And as an exercise in software development, I mean, we hear about this kind of stuff the whole time. You know, there's clearly, what is causing this? Are there bugs in the software? Is it genuine? Microsoft really has trouble straddling different OSs, or is there something in the roadmap that's changing that we don't know yet? Because the next version of Windows Phone is supposed to have introduce greater multitasking. So,
right,
this is kind of like as ever with Microsoft product, it's kind of like a moving train. The product is out there, the roadmap is constant, the track is constantly being relayed while the train is moving because of various like product development initiatives or strategic changes in direction from Microsoft. So the question is, you know, is this a technical problem we're looking at here, or is this a kind of a roadmap issue around what's going on maybe way down the track with something like multitasking or the degree of Silverlight support or kinds of other issues that could be happening in the future of phone that we don't actually know about just yet?
The part of this that just is the most puzzling to me is, okay, the people who are working on Windows Phone 7, a lot of these people came to that team from Windows.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing that Windows does understand and has a pretty decent track record of, although there are hiccups in it still, but is the whole servicing issue, right? Like, how do you get updates to customers, like patches and fixes and automatic update, Windows update services? Like, they get how this works, right? Mm. And this is something they've learned a lot about and have a lot of knowledge about. So I'm just really kind of stymied why this knowledge and experience isn't translating more directly to the phone.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they're pretty good at it on Windows. Why aren't they good at it at all on the phone? I mean, the one variable that doesn't exist in Windows and does on the phone is the carrier.
I feel we're falling down the hole here of just the amount of, just the sheer number of relationships that are involved in making this thing work. The different number of hardware, the different number of handsets, the different terms and conditions, the different service providers' networks. It's just, you know, it's a rat's nest. It's the classic rat's nest that's always frustrated a lot of people with mobile application development, which is there's so many different form factors to consider. There are so many different service providers to deal with that actually getting an application to run once the same way across lots of different handsets is next to impossible. You have to keep rewriting your application to make it run across different providers, networks, and their hardware. The thing that is interesting, we talked about offline, was has this problem affected Android? Has this problem affected Apple? And they've had their own problems as well. But overall, you don't seem to get this level of problem, it seems to me, or at least the coverage of it, maybe it's the coverage issue, isn't the same. Maybe there's more pressure on Microsoft here to get it right out the gate. Maybe we're used to Android by now, but I'm not familiar with Android having such a problem like this. And also, the other thing with Android is that you don't get with Windows Phone 7 is that the OEMs are allowed to customize and work the code, which fits more with their traditional business model. Whereas we know that, and so therefore they can make the OS work according with their own drivers and their hardware. Whereas we know that in the case with Windows Phone 7, Microsoft is not allowing people to fiddle with the code.
The Android issue, you know, because I'm not an Android user, I haven't kept up as closely on that. But I have seen some people say it also is dependent on carriers. Mm-hmm. And I think it was Ed Bott at ZDNet who said Android, on whenever it's on phones that are from AT&T, there's extra long delays, and they've had a history of delays. And they're also starting off that way with Windows Phone as well. AT&T seems to be the furthest behind of all the providers here in the U.S. in terms of getting the updates pushed out.
Well, it's interesting. Microsoft, that's an interesting point, because Microsoft seems to be really prioritizing the overseas carriers with this. And it seems to me, if it's a pretty widely held, you know, accurate view, that AT&T is a slow provider of service, you know, not just in terms of the bandwidth you get, but also the ability to deliver new service, it seems. So, you know, it could well be there's a problem here with the AT&T side of the equation. But, you know, again, the question is, how do you get around it? Apple has managed to get around it and has not seemed to have had too many problems in getting the iPhone updated.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the solution is or how they can fix this, but they really do need to fix this before Mango, because, again, as we were talking about offline, Microsoft has to get Mango out this year. Mm-hmm. I mean, the biggest, you know, there's a lot of stuff they've already promised for Mango, but the biggest thing to me is the HTML5 browser support that's coming with Mango. And you can already see that Windows Phone 7 is falling behind because it doesn't have this. Yeah. I mean, Microsoft's adding all these new cool updates to Bing on Android phones and on iPhone, and they can't add it to Windows Phone 7 because they don't have HTML5 support on the phone. So they're pushing out updates that have a lot of compelling functionality that people can't even get on Windows Phone 7, and it's really creating a lot of anger and angst among the users. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they've got to iron out these kinks with the providers, because supposedly Mango code is going to be like RTM'd around late summer, early fall, and if they have this long delay again like they're having with Nodo, they're not going to get Mango out this calendar year. And they've promised the handset makers, I hear, and the carriers that they are going to get it out this year. So they've got a big credibility gap right there if they don't come through with that, not to mention losing even more potential customers.
Well, this has been an important year for them, because I feel that there has been a great testing. It's a credibility issue here for Microsoft. They have to prove this thing doesn't just work. They also have to prove that customers want it. And the thing that I've noticed, actually, is that the number of ads on TV around the phone have actually just disappeared. We were getting a lot of them in the run-up to Christmas, and we're not getting any anymore. So it says to me there's kind of some kind of maybe a retrenchment inside Microsoft. So I just wonder. They're not releasing any market share stats on it either. They certainly haven't been bullish in coming out with the numbers as they have done with Windows 7 and as they have done with IE9, where they tried to talk with download numbers there. It's very, very classic Microsoft kind of belt and braces on this stuff. Like, you launch the product, then, you know, 100 days later or so, you say how many units of the product you ship in an attempt to kind of like prove that you're doing well. We just haven't had that so far from Microsoft.
No, we haven't. So, yep. It's not looking good.
So you said.
Not looking good right now.
Not at all. Well, something else that was let's talk the beauty of the web, Mary Jo.
Okay, let's talk about that.
It's a beautiful place, and I feel it's somehow more beautiful now that we have Internet Explorer 9. They launched that browser, was it last Monday now? It seems like even longer ago.
I know it does, yep.
And you kind of feel a little bit numb to it after a while because you've been covering it so closely. But we had the JavaScript performance, the HTML5 support, security. There was this kind of like privacy in the browser aspect, which is not, it's a whole separate issue. And do not track online. And then it came to the point we were just making there about download numbers and sales figures. Microsoft hit us pretty quickly 24 hours after to try and prove somehow that IE9 was doing very well. And I think it was something like, is it 2.4 million downloads 24 hours after the launch? I can't remember. It was putting up. Yeah, 2.3 million downloads that they claimed in the first 24 hours. Which is great. I ran some numbers. You know, we get a lot of these stats from different people, and people don't seem to bother putting them in context. So I thought it'd be worth doing some comparative analysis, and it turned out that it was doing a lot better than IE8 was, and it was kind of on a comparable download with Apple Safari 4 when that came out in June 2009. But it was not doing as well as Opera 11 or Firefox 3 was a few years back. That was the record-breaking Firefox download that hit 8 million downloads in the first 24 hours. So that was interesting to do, get out of context. And then I see that a few days later, the numbers are now apparently 7.1 million downloads on Firefox 4. And then NetApplications came out with some browser share stats, and they said that Firefox 4 now accounts for 3.7% of all browsers. So the numbers are speaking. It seems to me that it might well be, IE9 might well be a beautiful looking experience, but is it actually getting people interested and excited in downloading it? It seems, based on the initial download numbers, that we're not seeing it. We're not seeing those figures. And, you know, it feeds into the bigger story of the overall loss of market share for Internet Explorer, which is now beneath, is it beneath? It's less than 6. What's the latest stat, MJ? Is it less than 50% now? I think it's about 48% market share.
Yeah, I think so. It, like you said, it depends on whose stats you're going with, but 50 to 60, in that range somewhere.
It's done nothing but go down. And the current the version of IE with the largest market share right now, I think, is IE8. But you've still got a long, strong presence from IE7, and IE6 won't die. So it's interesting. I wonder, it seems to me that the biggest success for IE these days is going to be the corporate business computing world, because a lot of those guys have versions of their corporate applications, intranet and internet applications, that are built specifically for Internet Explorer. So it seems to me the market share is floating down and downwards, and unless there's a big kind of spike off of IE9, not even a big spike, but unless it picks up, it, you know, reverses as it starts picking up the first gear, second gear traction in the forward motion department, then it would seem to me that the market share is going to continue to decline. But how far does that fall go? Whereas when it comes to maybe more the end users, maybe the consumer guys, we're looking at, if not Firefox, which is here, kind of stable market share around a quarter of the web, then we're looking at Chrome, which is now the fastest growing browser. We could be, you know, if the initial download numbers are correct, it seems to me IE9 could be not the widespread success story that Microsoft would like it to be. Although I caveat that by saying maybe we're looking at more of a long-term burn on this one rather than a rapid initial spike, and maybe that long-term burn will come from the business users. I don't know, what are your kind of thoughts on that, MJ?
You know, it's funny because I've seen some people attribute their the IE9 kind of middling downloads to its lack of availability on Windows XP.
Yeah.
You know, I don't buy that. I don't, because I know that there's still a lot of the web using Windows XP, but I don't think those users who are using it would be the downloaders of IE9. Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of those people who use Windows XP are actually stuck on IE6. Mm-hmm. Like, those two things are together, kind of, for people I talk to who, you know, their businesses tell them they can't move off of XP or IE6 because they have hard-coded a lot of applications to that environment and they can't move. So, you know, people saying, oh, if Microsoft had put it on XP, they'd have so many more millions of downloads. I'm not sure that's true. Those guys aren't the early adopter or the most current version kinds of people who are running XP.
But XP is still about 45% of the market, so it's still a sizable market share.
Yeah. It's definitely a sizable market share. And, you know, the other big user base that's represented by XP are pirates. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of software pirates in other countries especially, but here too, who are using IE6 and XP because it's less secure. Mm-hmm. Or do you think those people are going to go get IE9? No. They don't want more secure. They want less secure. Mm-hmm. So, again, that kind of, to me, says that argument about XP availability is kind of a false one. Mm-hmm. The other thing I think that you have to remember is because Microsoft was so adamant about saying IE is part of the operating system, a lot of people don't feel a compelling need to run out and get the latest version of IE when it comes out. You know, Windows 7 shipped with IE 8. IE 8 works fine. Unless you're kind of like a technologist or somebody who really has some pressing need for HTML5 content, you're probably not going to go get it.
So you're arguing that it's sales of the OS drive sales of the browser, it sounds like.
To me, yeah.
And although I would notice that it's for, just caveat aside, I think caveat is my word of the day, but I keep using it, is I'm not sure sales of Windows 7, either on PC or out of the box or for download, necessarily helped IE 8 download or market share. Yep. It seems like it's still been a relatively slow crawl for IE 8.
Yeah. It is kind of like a catch 22. It's like if you get a version of the browser and you're one of those people who don't really care what browser you use, you're probably just going to use what's there. Mm-hmm. But if you are somebody who cares, you're probably not going to use IE. Mm-hmm. Like you, if you know about browsers, I think you tend to be somebody who probably is more likely to go get Chrome 10 or Firefox 4. And you might get IE9 just to try it and see what it's like, but I think you're more apt to go get a browser because there's something in it that you want that isn't in IE. So it's an interesting question. Like, do operating system sales drive browser share, and how much, or don't they? I don't think they hurt browser share. But yeah, I have to say I haven't yet gotten the final version of IE9. I tested the RCs and the beta, but I haven't really felt the compelling need to go get it because I've been pretty happy with Chrome.
Somebody somewhere is not downloading IE9, but they are downloading Chrome. Now, is Chrome growing fast because it's just there's a large number of geeks out there, and once we've got beyond the early adopter pool, it'll slow down? Or are they general consumers who are using it? Unclear. Same goes. Firefox seems to have hit a download issue. It's not progressing beyond the quarter market share stat. Again, why? Will Firefox 4 do anything about that? So it's the question of, like, why the download's not coming for IE9, but they are coming at least for Chrome, it seems. And there seems to be the fundamental dilemma. And it was interesting to me in all the press events that we went to, it was always Chrome, it seemed, that Microsoft was pitching itself against. It would never actually mention, it didn't mention Firefox, but it was always Chrome was the comparison.
Oh, really? Because that's interesting, because I've had people say to me they thought that Microsoft over-mentioned Firefox but didn't talk about Chrome enough.
No. Maybe it's a regional thing. Certainly here in Silicon Valley, in San Francisco, they were talking. Yeah. They were definitely talking Chrome.
Yeah. Interesting. I think something else that's going to affect the numbers is as Microsoft starts pushing the final version through Windows Update, which you're going to do. If you have installed the beta, you're going to see it show up in your updates as, I think, not the most high priority, but like the second highest priority kind of an update. Mm. And you can block it. There's a blocking tool if you're an organization that doesn't want it yet because you haven't tested against it. But they're going to pick up some share from that when it starts getting pushed through Windows Update.
Yeah.
So that's something else to keep in mind. But yeah, on the Chrome side, it's like I started trying Chrome because I was having trouble with the IE release candidate version. It wasn't working with all my sites. Mm. And even the final version, a few reviews I've read, including Ed Bott's review at ZDNet, talks about how there are still a number of websites that don't work right with the final version of IE9.
Yeah.
So that's problematic, you know, and we've talked about this before on this podcast. We've said, you know, whose fault is that? Is that the app vendors and the browser and the app vendors and the site vendors who need to update their code, or is it Microsoft's fault? You know, why aren't the traditional kind of fallbacks where you have the compatibility mode making that work? So that's another one of those things. I'm like, huh? I wonder if some people have had problems with specific sites. I've seen people say Facebook has had some problems. I've had problems with Twitter and IE9. So, all of those things add together as to why people may be like, oh, I don't really want it or I don't need it. And I don't think things like pin sites have really captured a lot of people's attention and imagination. You know, like the idea you could take a website in IE9 and pin it to your taskbar. I tried using that. It didn't work out that well for me because the way I work is I open millions of tabs all day long in my browser. And when I started using pinned sites, I was having some tabs open in one place and some in another, and I couldn't remember where my tabs were open. So I kept losing tabs. And I know I don't work like everybody does, and I'm not trying to say I do, but I think that's another thing that is going to take some time for people to understand and decide if that works for them or doesn't work for them.
The culture has been set around this in the same way that Microsoft set the culture on the desktop with Windows and Office for a long time. It's like the browser culture has been set around the tab experience. Like pin sites and things are like nice to kind of maybe derivations, and they might even be good ways of working. They might actually work on a logical level, but you know, in terms of a practical level, in terms of what customers are actually doing, they're not. And it seems to me Microsoft in these cases likes to wrap the partners into these kind of things and have like half a dozen partners or customer sites who've built applications that work specifically with that feature, so therefore they can go and sell it. So then they get them on and say, look, this is a cool feature. You can get this, you can tab all your auctions through email through the pin in it to your taskbar. And it's like, well, you know, I don't think that's how a lot of people work. You might have like some like massive browser rocket scientists who loves that, but it's not going to work for the average person who just basically has lots of tabs open.
Yeah. You know, I think it'll work for like the average user who doesn't work like us. You know, like if say you want to always have one tab open on your screen so you can check your online bank account, and there's security measures in there so that if you want to keep that open, you know, you're going to be safe. But I that's not how I work with my browser. So unless there's some really compelling new thing coming, I don't see myself adopting that model. It's kind of like jumpless. Like it was one of those things in Windows 7 that everybody was like, yeah, jumpless, and then nobody really jumped on that bandwagon, no pun intended. And it's like now you don't really hear people talking as much about jumpless because it was one of those technologies that was like, yeah, they tried it, and people haven't really glommed on to using Windows that way.
Well, this is why it's Microsoft does this a lot, like you said, jumpless as well. Microsoft has these great ideas that don't necessarily work out. I mean, and you as a partner run a huge bet in developing for it, because down the road, if it hasn't been enough traction in it, obviously from the customers, then it gets yanked by Microsoft, and you kind of were the guy who was developing for it. So these kind of features always come with a huge you know, kind of risk factor attached to them. You know, there's a certain sweet spot in the market right now. It's certainly around the browser, and I feel we haven't seen the next breakthrough in innovation on that yet. And I'm not quite sure what Microsoft is offering is going to offer that step change that's going to like pull everyone around to abandoning in the competition and going with Firefox going with Internet Explorer 9.
Yeah, I mean, I'm happy. I'm actually happy that Microsoft's trying new things. Like, I don't want to say, hey, just browsers are great the way they are, you know, and nobody should do any innovation around browsers. I totally don't think about things that way. But, you know, the reason I use Chrome, I can tell you, the reason I use Chrome is when I go to a site, it opens fast. There's no little whirring wheel, whirring around, waiting for sites to open. It's like I click on it, the site opens. It's a lightweight browser that does what I want a browser to do, and it doesn't give me a lot of extra bells and whistles.
Yeah, definitely. Well, let's kind of, on that note, let's move into talking about Mix, because we can talk about some of this some more. The conference is Microsoft's answer to Adobe's Max, which comes up every year in Los Angeles. It's targeting web developers, it's targeting designers, it's targeting people who build like media content for the web and other sort of non-webby environments. It's really Microsoft's really trying to like make its mark here, I think, aren't they? They've been pushing this conference for a few years. Silverlight was the golden child for a few years, and then that kind of seems to be on the back foot now. And we're taking a look at the session schedules for Mix, which is it's in Vegas. We're looking at HTML5. We're looking at CSS3. Looking at Windows Phone 7 Boot Camp. I'm looking at something about building for Flickr. Yeah. Mono State of the Nation from Miguel de Casa, which would be interesting. What What are we to deduce from what we're looking at here? Is Microsoft joined the HTML5 loving and finally given up on trying, like, you know, have everyone building just for Silverlight, or are we, you know, are we just seeing is this a passing state for Microsoft? Do you think, Mary Jo?
The passing state of Microsoft. Yeah. Now, you know what I think is going to be interesting to watch is almost like the face-off of Silverlight and HTML here. Because there are quite a few sessions also on Silverlight, and with Scott Guthrie being one of the keynoters, you know we're going to hear about Silverlight 5 and probably see a beta or a test build, right? Mm-hmm. So I don't think we're going to only hear about HTML. And I think we're also not only going to hear about Silverlight. I think you're going to hear both sides, and both Dean H. and Scott Gu are keynoting. So it almost sets things up to me like an internal turf war kind of thing. Like, which one will be triumphant, you know? And I know it's not an either-or thing. Like, I'm not being that overly simplistic. I think what we keep coming back to is that whole thing that happened last year at the PDC when Microsoft said our Silverlight strategy has changed. And the way it changed was they're really playing up Silverlight as the development platform now and really playing it down as the cross-platform solution.
Yeah.
And that keeps coming up over and over when you read the session abstracts and when you see what they're saying. It's like they're not really talking about Silverlight on all kinds of devices and Silverlight everywhere like they used to. Instead, they're talking about Silverlight as a business app development platform, and as the Windows Phone 7 development platform.
It's definitely a showdown of some kind, but Silverlight is not front and center as it used to be, is it? I mean, they've definitely realized, or at least they're paying a huge amount of lip service to HTML5 these days, and too much even, because they've gone from skeptic to, like, you know, evangelist at a time when HTML5 won't even finish for another 3 years. But I think it's all designed to kind of get people thinking that Microsoft is synonymous with web standards. I think that's the real goal here while talking about it at events like this.
Yep. And also, I mean, we've mentioned this before, but, you know, IE9 and HTML5 are very key to what Microsoft's doing with Windows 8. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Windows 8, when it finally ships, may actually have IE10 in it instead of IE9, maybe, if they can keep this rapid pace of development up on the IE side. But even if it doesn't, this whole idea of the pin sites and adhering to HTML5 standards, as Microsoft goes towards Windows 8, which this year we might even see Windows 8, it sounds like, as a preview build, you know, as they go towards that goal, they need a browser that lets people kind of think more about touch being the centerpiece. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you look at the Windows UI right now with Windows 7, it's not a touch-centric environment. But if you put things like pin sites and IE9 with HTML5 capabilities at the center, now you start seeing, like, oh, maybe this is how Microsoft is going to transition to the next version of Windows and, you know, make it more applicable to slates and tablets and have an app store with some apps already populating it. By the time Windows 8 ships. So it's like they're almost hinting around very early hints with IE9 and HTML5 where they're kind of going to be putting the emphasis with Windows 8, in my opinion.
Right. Well, it'd be interesting to see how touchy it gets, and it'd be interesting to see how far Mix is a foreshadowing of what's to come. I mean, I doubt that we're talking about, I know they won't be talking about Windows 8 at this Mix, but they're going to be prioritizing people around focusing on Windows Phone 7, and they'll be evangelizing people to start building for Internet Explorer 9 as it's just out the door, and they won't want to talk about Internet Explorer 10 at all. Well, when you admit they're working on it.
Really? So, you don't think so? I wonder if we might see a sneak peek, actually. I really do.
Do you think so?
Just because, like, think about this. Like, it took them a year from last Mix to this year to come out with IE9, right? It took them just basically a year. So if they were going to do that again, they would have to start showing it now to come out in a year with IE10.
The question for them is the bigger question is, their roadmap is correct, as they've said to me, which is like they are not speeding up the cycles. They're not trying to become as fast as Chrome.
Yeah.
And they're going to stick to, and if you look at the numbers, it's roughly, you know, what, 2 years or so, then there's no change. But the cycles did get faster on IE. It's a matter of whether that's something they want to admit to and say, they're going to say, yes, we are speeding up development, and it'll be more than a 2 year process, or less than a 2 year process. It'll be, 9 months or so. But that requires a huge change in the way Microsoft operates, because when you look at things like Chrome, you don't really get huge announcements around the new version of Chrome. It just appears, it slips out. Microsoft's whole manufacturing process is geared around the iteration of, like, here's the alpha, here's the beta, here's the partners, here's the product. They put a whole kind of like a whole routine together, a whole like performance around it, is orchestrated around the delivery of one product. And for them to suddenly then go, we're speeding things up, we're not going to make things such a flag waving event, that's going to really have to change their culture. And I think, when I spoke to Ryan Gavin as well, he said certain browsers came out with multiple releases, and it was hard to tell if there was anything valuable in them. He said, I bet the change in my pocket, you couldn't tell me what was in the build releases of each separate version of Firefox. But then, it was, to compare that with Internet Explorer 9, well, there wasn't a great deal of milestones in that either. There were a few step changes along the way when they unveiled the Chrome, for example. That was a big one. But overall, the feature updates in there, was it worth it? Did it justify the period of time they did spend building the thing, in terms of they could have had it out quicker? So where am I going with this thought? I think for them to speed up the development process and deliver it, i.e. quicker, would require a cultural shift as much as anything else, and they'd have to come out and admit they are now in the game to kind of slip out Internet Explorer as less a big launch event and more kind of like, okay, here it is, here's the new version every month. I'm not sure they're willing to make that change.
Yeah. I mean, I think a once a year update of IE wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility. I don't know. But we'll see. It would say a lot, I think, to developers and to customers if Microsoft came to Mix and said, okay, we're not ready to like give you a beta, obviously, yet, since we just shipped IE9, but here's a developer preview of IE10. Because, they always build products simultaneously too, right? Like as they were building Windows 7, they were starting already to get, coding, or really early coding on Windows 8. So they always do things kind of, there's people working on the next iteration of everything. Like there's already somebody working on Windows Phone 8, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. But I don't think and this is where things get complicated. From the marketing person's point of view, they don't want people thinking about IE10 just yet. They want you building for IE9.
That's true.
And that's where the discussion gets muddied, because the marketing and the marketing guys get involved. If this was a pure world of pure technical development, absolutely it makes sense. But Microsoft knows it's got to get the ISVs building for IE9. It's got to have like the eBays having their sites running on IE9.
Yeah. Yeah, true. The other thing I am pretty sure we're going to see at Mix is more features that we don't know about in Mango yet, the next version of Windows Phone 7. I'm also betting we're going to hear more about HTML development tools and how they tie into Visual Studio and Expression. Mm-hmm. And I think they're going to talk more about that, like how we're making it easier for you as developers to use the Microsoft tooling you know already to build HTML5 apps and sites. Yeah. I think we're going to hear that.
That's something they haven't spoken about, and they're vulnerable on right now, I think.
Yep. And the one other thing I'd love them to talk about, but I am highly skeptical that they will talk about, is this thing I wrote about a while ago called Jupyter, app framework for Windows 8. Yeah. Which is heavily Silverlight and XAML based. Like this would be the perfect show to talk about that, but it's too early because they don't want to let any Windows 8 clues out of the bag yet. So
no, I think we're looking at what, PDC probably, for something like that.
Yeah, but I think Mix is going to be interesting. Definitely a lot of controversial topics that are in the news right now, and Microsoft's got hot competition in all the areas that we're going to hear about. So should be good.
So. The big man. What kind of moods are you in this week?
The big man.
Frustrated, intense, all business, victorious, or monkey boy? What do you think? What mood is Steve Ballmer in for this episode?
I think intense.
Yeah.
And the reason I think so is I even though publicly they're saying they're all happy with how everything's going with the phone, I bet they're not too happy inside.
No, I bet I was going to say heads aren't rolling in this stage, but I bet asses are getting kicked.
Chairs are not yet being thrown, but possibly footstools are. We need the crashing footstool sound. Boom! Yeah. I think he's and the management also are not happy with how this is looking right now. And, you know, the public stance is, oh, you guys are blowing this out of proportion, and it's only the loyalists and the evangelists who are complaining. Well, you don't want to piss those guys off, because those are your bread and butter people. And I think Microsoft knows that, and they really are not happy with how 180-degree turn, basically, since the phone reviews coming in really great, and now people are like, what the heck is going on over there? They don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, definitely. Intense is a good way of putting it. I think they have done a 180 on the phone, and they do risk losing the early adopters who shape the debate on these things as well, and create the kind of the cultural mindset of whether this product is it a success, or it's worth buying, or whatever. This really is Microsoft's, I know cliche has been packing today, Microsoft's last stand when it comes to the phone. I mean, it was supposed to be a reset on the Windows Mobile, wasn't it? And you know, apparently the reset is having to be like a reset again.
So, Gavin, that wraps up another episode of Microbyte.
It does indeed. My name's Gavin Clark. I'm software editor for The Register.
And I'm Mary Jo Foley, editor of the All About Microsoft blog. And this has been Microbyte, brought to you by the people who bite the hand that feeds IT.